Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have returning guests and one of my favorite people of all time, Dr. Amit Goswami. He is a theoretical quantum physicist and is a revolutionary among a growing body of renegade scientists who in recent years have ventured into the domain of the spiritual in an attempt to both interpret the seemingly inexplicable findings of curious experiments and to validate intuitions about the existence of a spiritual dimension of life. In his newest book, Quantum Economics, Unlocking the Power of an Economics of Consciousness, Dr. Goswami presents a way out of the current world of economic inequality, where the middle class is disappearing and poverty grows, that allows us to bring meaning and value back into our lives through the economics of consciousness. You can find out more about Dr. Goswami by visiting his website, which is www.amitgoswami.org, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Goswami to the show. Good day, sir. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Robert. It's
my pleasure, and kind of as I mentioned before we came on air, every time I get one of your books and read it, I have to reread it and reread it until I can actually grasp it. But that's a good thing. You cause me to think, which, you know, it's a good thing nowadays.
Well, you know, I mean, economics was a tough subject for me to write about too. So I don't disagree that it requires some reading, because you know economics is not something that people pick up every day. It's not exactly just theory and philosophy, because it has to do with our pocketbook, and we become serious very soon when we write or read about it. But the book is actually pretty light. You have to admit.
I do consider
in that account. Good.
Yeah, I do admit, and you know, normally the topic of economics is a very dry subject, but in your book you make it very applicable to everyone who reads it to their daily lives, and that's I think what makes it of value.
You know, it was easy for me to do that because I myself had to struggle, so I could. I really sympathized with the reader of economic books because, you know, it is a struggle. So I wanted to write a very simple treatise of basic concepts like money and stocks and what happens with economic transition, basic ideas of Adam Smith, before we go into the details of why a quantum economics is needed, why a revolution is needed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to start with one of the things I kind of chuckled when I started reading your book is in the beginning you indicated that there was a coincidental call from the president of the World Business Academy that kind of shifted your attention to the idea of a new paradigm in economic thinking. And it seems that these kind of coincidental things happen with you quite often.
Yes. They are regular happening, and it really helps me to focus my direction into a new way that I would not anticipate at that point. This one is the strangest one, but it's a very similar thing happened with Quantum Doctor, writing of the book Quantum Doctor as well.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the one thing that I've learned from your books. You know, is that that in the quantum world, you know, those little coincidental happenings that kind of guide us you know, are just really important to pay attention to. You know, that, you know,
yeah.
and a lot of people just disregard them or brush them off as being something, you know, that just happens rather than looking to have that it has meaning for them.
Right, and lots of people, let's face it, you know, they don't think about meaning anymore because they have been sold by scientific materialism, the prevailing academic philosophy based on, you know, materialist science that matter is everything. They don't think of meaning because matter, of course, cannot process meaning. Matter can process only information. So now the going mantra is information processing, which doesn't satisfy, but people do it. And
yeah.
get addicted to it. And then they are not satisfied, so they miss the meaning processing, but they don't know what they're missing because they just don't think about meaning or values as something that they miss.
Yeah, yes. You know, and to me, that's, you know, it's those little guideposts that we get that really can direct us to really having some meaningful types of activities in our life, you know?
Yeah, and what I propose is exactly that, Robert. I mean, quantum economics will make meaning and values as economic commodities. So people will be encouraged to actually consume meaning and values. As they consume, they will grow personal growth. And as they grow, more they consume. You know, this is literally what Abraham Maslow called satisfying our hierarchy of needs. When we have the basic needs satisfied, we need to satisfy higher needs. Except, of course, you have to be told what are the higher needs, because not all of us have the sensitivity to directly experience and find out what their higher needs are. Because, you know, the prevailing worldview, when that goes against human beings being human beings, but propagates the idea that human beings are machines. They don't have any thinking power or any thinking power beyond what is programmed into them. Then, of course, we shortchange ourselves. So that
yeah.
trend can be reversed and has to be reversed, and quantum economics is probably the best way of reversing it.
Yeah, I agree. Because from, you know, the information that you put forth, it's the, you know, when we see that economic struggle, that collapse that we had, or not collapse, but the, you know, that recession, that basically the old ways of economic thinking, you know, supply, simple supply and demand, really don't work anymore.
Because of a few problems that has come about in the way that we apply Adam Smith's ideas. The idea was good. We have gifted people. We have needy people. We have gifted people who produce, needy people who consume. And then the idea was that if people are guided by their selfish motive, then the invisible hand of the free market, which Adam Smith never explained, by the way, but still, invisible hands of the free market, it's a proposal that something will automatically guide the market to achieve some kind of equilibrium between production and consumption. Prices will be more or less stable. And that's what I mean. What I mean by a good economy, and the resources will be shared in an equitable way between the different sectors of the economy. All these things will be done by invisible hands of the free market. So the idea is that don't do anything. Let people's selfishness guard everything. Implicit in that is the assumption, big assumption now, but implicit in that, you can read directly Adam Smith's work, Wealth of Nations, and you don't have to take my word for it, but implicitly Adam Smith is repeatedly saying that, well, of course, the current mode of the society, namely people should be ethical, and people are creative because that was a, you know, time of enlightenment. People were, creativity was just exploding in the society. So naturally, those two assumptions were very normal, and Adam Smith repeatedly implied them. What happened, however, is that the way that was applied, the implicit assumption of social good, that was not really followed up very well. So even though capitalistic economy was making progress, problems were there, big problems were there about these ups and downs, boom and bust. And the bust time, people really suffered. And because people suffered, something needed to be done about the social goods. So Keynes modified Adam Smith's economics and explicitly included social good in this sense of government intervention. This is a deviation from free market philosophy, but still it was necessary because otherwise what would people do but suffer when recession time comes and they lose their jobs? Also, how would the economy get out of the recession, because that too is a problem. Adam Smith left it completely to creativity of the businesses. Now that, of course, is unpredictable. So on the whole, Keynes's idea was pretty good to revive the economy through government intervention. This is called demand-side economics. And so that is all good. But still, this is still Newtonian. How to make it quantum? Because quantum is the worldview. So naturally, when consciousness enters every aspect of our life, including every aspect of our society, then we expect that some new changes will come. Right at the time, look at what has happened. The shortcomings of the Adam Smith economy became very, very obvious since the Great Depression. This is the most serious downturn that we have ever faced. And actually, in actuality, people still challenge the idea that we have really recovered, seem to have recovered a little. So this problem with this form of economics as modified by scientific materialism is very severe. How to rescue it? To rescue it, obviously, creativity has to extend the arena of economic application. The entire field of economics got to be extended, not only for the reason that I'm talking about, but also for the fact that material resources are limited. This limitation imposes serious limitation. Also, it brings pollution. That also is a serious limitation. So you cannot go on indefinitely expanding in the material sector anyway. But consciousness has, besides the material experience, three other subtle experiences. Namely, we feel vital energies connected with life. We have mental thinking. We think meaning. And, of course, the values that we spoke about in the very beginning. All three experiences, they come to us through feeling, thinking, and intuition. So the idea of quantum economics, because quantum physics allows us to make a science of all of our experiences equitably with the material experience of sensing. So naturally we think all of our experiences are valid, and all of our experiences are satisfying to our needs. Except that the subtle experiences are higher needs than the material experiences. We don't really need the subtle experiences to survive. We need only the material experience to survive for our physical body. But as soon as we have done the survival, we hanker for the subtle experiences. In fact, we might even say that we live for the subtle experiences. We live for how we feel. We live for how we think. We live for those intuitive values, the archetypes that we pursue throughout our life. Every profession is connected with an archetype, right? So in this way, if we make the economy extended to the subtle, then what happens? It turns out that the technology, the science of the subtle, is just ready. It's ready for us to expand into this huge new venture. It's like a frontier opening up. That's the big thing about quantum economics. It will revolutionize our society, our cultures, our businesses, and forever banish all these problems with economic expansion, sustainability, and, of course, the up-down, the boom and bust cycles.
Yeah, we know the subtle experiences, that you spoke about. It seems that those aspects are what was missing from the models of the past. That simply seemed to address the physical aspect of the physical nature.
Right. they could not be blamed for it. Of course, you know, I mean, we have only the science of the growth, science of matter. Only with quantum physics can we ever even imagine that we have a science of the subtle. Because quantum physics is subtle, it's all the way quantum. There is no Newtonian physics applicable to subtle. Subtle is not micro making up macro. In the case of matter, because we have macro world that we experience directly, micro we cannot experience directly. We have to look at the micro through our machines, microscopes, and all that. So macro is Newtonian, and that of course is why we discovered the macro first, made a science of the macro first, made the science of the gross first, and only when quantum physics came about can we venture into the subtle. And now even subtle technology is being developed in small scale. I'm only proposing that let's do it in large scale. We can do it in large scale too and save our economy from these huge ups and downs and sustainability problems and expansion problems and so forth.
Yeah. You mentioned that is one of the seven steps to the quantum economy, and those are great. I agree that those technologies as we start to experience success with them, that can be demonstrated. I mean, it seems that people, particularly, with government, when you're trying to deal with shifting a worldview, and particularly having to deal with a political structure that kind of has to, support that view, it can be a real challenge. But it seems that, small successes that can be demonstrated would go a long way in supporting that shift to including the subtle experiences as part of the model.
Absolutely. The small successes like, what I'm proposing is that we have revitalization industry first, Solar energy industries have to start small similarly, and over the years they improved enormously. We are not faced with similar difficulties because subtle energy is cheap. It's infinite. So we don't really have the difficulties that solar energy industry has to go through. But we have difficulties of subtle energy being, quote-unquote, not so accessible to our senses. We have to detect it and deploy it and all on the basis of instruments which are indirect. And that indirect instrumentation can always be subjects of controversy. we have the ability of feeling the subtle energy. So ultimately, it is the guideline will involve us. We have to feel good. Now, the feeling good is so spectacular that people with open mind don't object so much. Like if you have spring water, which is full of vital energy, and if you have bottled water or tap water, even better, for a contrast, you'll see right away that what I'm talking about, that there's something special in the spring water, that there's just no doubt about it. Or another example, if you take an organically grown green bean, this is actually my experience. I was astounded. I never had that since my childhood, which was, of course, long, long time ago. So I had forgotten the taste of organically grown food. So here I am in America, and I usually eat supermarket foods, and then a person comes and they want us to contribute to this farm-grown food. And to convince us, he just gives me a green bean and says, bite in it. And so I bite in it, and wow, side by side, he gives me the supermarket bean, and the taste is so spectacularly different that my wife and I immediately contributed to the farm product we signed up. So, in that way, direct experience. Today we have, finally, measurement apparatuses which will assure the buyer that, look, your direct experience is not false, it's not just subjective. We can also show a measurable difference. We bring these machines close to a green bean bought from the supermarket ants who had been bought from an organic farm, and you can see the difference directly, experientially. You can look at it. You can look at the pointer of the machine. So in that way, we have the technology to verify what we feel. And I think that is what was needed before the industry kind of faith that they are doing something which is real, which is not fake, which is not just imagination.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's, you know, that measurement and that shift to a higher experience, a better experience, that seems to be what is necessary, is needed to be infused into business, into the whole idea of business and economics. And now, you know, that's one, the inclusion of the subtle experience, you know, to me, is that what the idea of what the economics of consciousness is about, is the inclusion of the subtle into the economic model?
Yes, it is. It is basically the inclusion of the subtle in the economic model, but it has several features that need to be mentioned. First of all, when we talk about vital energy industry, then we are talking very similar to the material industry. What I just talked about, but maybe one more example is needed to make it even more clear what we are doing, what the new industry is about. It's not just farm-grown beans, which have mm-hmm. better vital energy than supermarket beans. That's something that is important, but what are we doing that is new? The new stuff is this, oranges. Now, everybody who has a common cold, and if you are told to eat oranges, will have the experience that oranges really help heal common cold. Now, Linus Pauling, a Nobel laureate scientist, from this concluded that it must be the vitamin C. So he started selling the idea that vitamin C can cure common cold. And indeed, lots of vitamin C was sold for a few years, but nobody found any particular effect. And then clinical studies were done, and they found that, no, nothing is happening. So we stopped that lunacy. But it's not completely lunacy. Linus Pauling had the right idea, except that he missed the fact that when we take molecules out of the oranges, the vital energy part is not picked up. Vital energy is associated mm-hmm. with the macro shape of the oranges, not with the microscopic molecules. So vitamin C is not it unless it's revitalized with vital energy taken out from the bulk oranges separately and transferred back to the vitamin C. This is the technology we now have. So we not only can do that and have a revitalized vitamin C that will cure your cold, but for example, we can take the vital energy out of a rose and put that back in a rose-scented perfume, which does give you the scent but does not give you the romantic feeling that rose gives you. But we now can extract the romantic feeling, and we can put that back into the perfume, which is just the molecules. And in that way, you don't have to carry the bulk of the rose in your purse. But any time you want to romance, you can have it just by having a whiff of the scent.
That would be a bestseller for sure. But, you know, no doubt. So, and I understand, you know, that those two examples that you gave, those are good examples of, you know, if we were to pursue the idea of, you know, being producers of products that include those subtle experiences, then it seems right. that is what would kind of take us to the next level.
Right. And when we have been vitalized, then we learn to live the idea that these vital energies are fun. And then we get the idea, why can't we vitalize our homes? And there we need a different approach, because how do you vitalize our homes? Well, we know some ways of vitalizing already that we use. For example, several decades ago, people discovered that indoor plants are a great idea. People didn't know why. Empirically, they just found that, oh, if we have indoor plants, it's great. People even discovered that tree hugging feels good. You know, not everybody does, so we joke about it. But tree hugging is good. Because why? Because trees have a lot of vital energy. Not the wood part. That part has very little vital energy. But tree hugging with young leaves and stuff, you know. You have to be a little daring.
Discerning.
You can just, you know. So, but anyway, indoor plants really are a great idea, because that gives profuse vital energy in a living area. But there is even better way of doing it. The whole idea of making these values part of our economic scene would depend on, you know, for that we cannot find any plant which has it. And we cannot find a plant that will generate really vital energy that makes you feel happy. That kind of vital energy plants don't have. They are not developed enough yet. But human beings can be found who have that kind of power of love. And these people, of course, are called mystic. They were produced by chance in the past. I'm saying by chance from the business point of view, for their own personal experience, of course. They went out of the society and they sat in caves or went to a desert like Jesus did and became, quote-unquote, enlightened. They found God, whatever way you want to put it. But what happened as a result is that if these people, if you sit in the proximity of such people, you feel happy. I have done that myself several times, and anybody who wants to verify this can find a mystic. There is a hugging mother who comes to America regularly, so you don't have to look very far. You can just go. She sees thousands of people when she comes to your city, and she visits like 10, 20 American cities every year. So you don't have to be deprived of this for very long. When she comes, you just go and get her, and you will see what I mean. You feel happy. You feel love in her proximity. So we have living examples like that already. Of course, you have heard of Mother Teresa, who recently died. But that's okay. There are others. And what the good news is, quantum physics, for the first time in human history, has discovered the way to enlightenment. I'm not kidding. We really know the process. It's called inner creativity. Creativity applied to inner transformation. It is a process that anybody can apply. You can apply. All you have to be is wanting to do it, wanting to transform, and have to develop some endurance of boredom. That's all. You have to, you know, meditation is boring, let's face it, initially. So you have to have endurance. You have to be persistent in your wanting to transform, and you have to endure the boredom that just sitting represents. But if you do those two things, focusing and sitting, I call it a dooby-dooby-doo experience, then you can creatively discover the archetype of goodness, archetype of happiness, archetype of wholeness, which makes us happy. And then you become a human capital. In your presence, people will be happy. And look, situation has now already arisen. People live such stressful life. Who wouldn't pay $200 an hour for the company of happiness, for feeling happy? I would. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have such experiences, but I wouldn't hesitate a moment to have that experience again if a payment system could be developed. Because otherwise what happens, you know, you go to Amitananda Mahima, this hugging mother, and they only allow you to sit just to complete a hugging, which takes just a few seconds. And then you move on, and another person comes in, because it's all free. But if you could pay for it, I mean, you would, wouldn't you? And the really these mystics, now they are few in number, so of course they are in huge demand because they are so few. But if we can produce them in profusion, which I think we can, if we make a, you know, like a 5-year plan, a farm with long sightedness, a farm which can plan long term, And there are such farms, you know. Solar energy took a long time to develop, and these people were patient for 25 years, 35 years. They researched before they could succeed in making large solar farms. Why can't we have similar patience in developing human capital? I'm sure we have.
Yeah.
So we will produce these people.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Dr. Goswami, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick 90-second break and invite anyone, if they'd like to call in with any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359, or for those of you who are listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Dr. Goswami, feel free to type it in there, and we'll get to that right after the break. And then, Dr. Goswami, when we get back, I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about money, you know, and our view, because, I mean, in economics, obviously, we think about money, and, you know, I would kind of want to talk about how that fits into the picture of the economy, of consciousness, and maybe some redefinition that we may have to do, okay?
Okay. There you go.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And like I said in the commercial, please help support our guests by going and purchasing their books. Again, today we're talking with Dr. Amit Goswami about his newest book, Quantum Economics, Unleashing the Power of an Economics of Consciousness. But also a couple of the books that he has that he was on our show and talked about, The Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization, and my personal favorite, which is Quantum Creativity, Think Quantum, Be Creative. Those two are also available. Definitely check those out. Again, it gives you something to think about and really helps shift your perspective. And so with that, we're back. Dr. Goswami.
Hi,
okay. Well, let's go ahead and now and talk money, because you know, in the economics, you know, money is, you know, gosh, you know, money makes the world go round, they say. But in the quantum economics perspective, where does money fit in this, and also with subtle experiences?
You know, this is such a good question. The first time I had become aware of the connotation we have for money in the part of society that I used to move at that time, and I'm sure that lots of people, lots of our listeners, because they too must be like me to be attending your show, because your show is geared to personal growth and happiness and stuff. But the experience was that if you meditate, okay, and you are in a pretty serene state because you are being, you know, the guided meditation that I was doing was like a, you know, very much self-hypnosis producing. The lecturer was asking us to imagine a beautiful place, and we did that, and feeling pretty happy. And all of a sudden he says, now think of money. How much money does your friend make? And immediately the happiness just disappeared, And he laughed and said that, ah, see, the energy of money is all, you all think of energy of money being negative. Energy of money is negative to many of us, and this is why we never think that money can ever buy anything positive. Money cannot buy love. We say that repeatedly to everybody. Money cannot buy happiness. And this is Jesus and other mystics, of course, sort of persuaded people thinking this way too. I mean, they too are at fault because, you know, for them, the world did not have any attraction. So they did live the world of samsara, worldly stuff, and money included. But they forgot that people are not with them on that one. People who have to live in the world, they need money because money is the simplest way to make a transaction, economic transaction. Nobody has found any better way. You know, some people talk about bartering, barter economy, give up money because money is the source of all evil. This is just not going to do it. Money is so convenient. There is just no way that we can give up the idea of money. But money is negative to us. So, you know, how to make it positive? Quantum economics will make it positive. Why? Because now, with quantum economics, with vital energy in the economic market, with mental meaning, even spiritual values, like if you could buy happiness to buy the 1 hour from a sage in whose proximity you sit and you feel happy, then money becomes positive again. Then you won't have the feeling that your money is only negative. It buys only things that gives you pleasure. But then, you know, pleasure is always followed by pain or at least boredom. It doesn't do it for you anymore after a while. So the whole idea that money buys only transitory, pleasureful things and therefore has a negative connotation goes away because happiness is not a transitory thing. You get happiness, you come back, you get more happiness, you come back, and then you wonder, how can I be happy by myself? So you start doing things that will make you happy and the happiness will stick. So there is a fundamental difference between pleasure and happiness. So as we go about making money positive, the whole attitude towards money changes. What happens then to our economy is even more interesting. In the economy, what is happening lately is because under scientific materialism, who denies creativity, creativity has gone out of the society. Information processing is not creativity. Creativity is meaning processing. Since meaning is no longer the thing we seek, everything we made out of information, you know, digitalized, and that is what is considered to be epitome of civilization, but that cannot invoke creativity. For creativity, you really have to go the hard way and start processing meaning again. Because creativity is discovery of new meaning and preferably new meaning with a new vision of the archetype that you are worrying about, like love, beauty, justice, truth. Those are the archetypes that we investigate and we make a new form of the archetype and then we can sell it as creative. All the material technologies included are renditions of archetypes of truth. So, what happens then is that in the quantum economics, now we can have products that have infinite capacity. But in the materialist economics, we don't, because matter is always finite. So with creativity dried up, what do companies do? They obviously see that, well, if we go on building the same products, you know, how many generations of cell phone can you sell? I mean, of course, cell phones are still selling. I mean, I suppose if there's iPhone 5 or 6, I forget which one is the current iPhone. But how long will it go? I mean, can you imagine iPhone 20? I guess you can, and it may happen, but I doubt it. It will be supplanted by something else, something completely different. But this is the situation with material goods. So what happens then is that the money investors, they are not feeling very enthusiastic about making investment into something that will give only diminishing return or profit. iPhone 20 will not create the same excitement as iPhone did initially. So investors know that, and they are not going to invest in the future iPhones as much as they invested in the beginning iPhone. So this being the case, we have a genuine problem of what to do with the money. And when recession time comes, as you know, no thanks to the Fed, you have unlimited money available, especially if you live in America. This is a special advantage because, you know, we don't have gold standard anymore. It's dollar standard. So dollar is available for loaning indefinite amount. A business can get today access to dollar is just almost infinite. I mean, if you have some creditworthiness, you can get dollars to invest. But where do you invest? There's no place to invest. As I said, no creative product, much creative product available. So what to do with the money that they can freely get practical interest free? They had a fantastic idea. Well, do develop subtle money. What is subtle money? This is the thing. We disbelieve subtle energy. You know, if you ask any materialist will say, oh, there's no such thing as vital energy. But we don't disbelieve subtle money. So what is subtle money? Subtle money is the idea that the money will come maybe in the future. Like you have a stock, which is real money, sort of, because stock has a going value. Value may go up in the future, value may also go down in the future. But you can buy a future commodity. The price of the commodity varies, and you can buy that. Or you can buy a future of something. This is called a derivative. You are betting on the basis of the value in the future of something that is tangible now. Sometimes a derivative can be formed in a different way. For example, housing mortgage. You couple up many mortgages. Mortgages just sit idle in a bank. That used to be the case, and the money is held up. What you do now is that you do a coupling of many mortgages for many different sources, and then you sell this product to other people saying that, okay, this is a derivative of money, and this thing is quite stable. It's only go up because housing prices are going to go up, and therefore you have absolutely no risk, and you sell this product. This is what we did in the Great Recession. These things were sold, these derivatives. And what happened? So then the housing prices did not continue to grow. All of a sudden, the bubble burst, and of course, you know what happened. So many people lost money. So in this way, the investment banking operates for people at a gambling casino to employ their money. And if you are knowledgeable, just as in a gambling casino, you can make a lot of money. But on the average, most people are losing money doing these things. Investment banking now operates 10 times capacity than the production consumption economy. So all the money that the Fed puts into the economy, thinking that this is the way to move the economy again, actually does not go into the production consumption economy at all, instead goes to investment banking, much of it. This is the tragedy of today, and this is why, of course, the wealth gap increases, because all this money goes in the hands of people who can afford to do gambling, and some of them make huge amounts of money through investment banking. So what I'm saying is that if the subtle energies come into the society, come into the economy, then people have another way of investing, and they won't need to invest through this gambling casino. I think some people will always gamble. We cannot prevent that. But most people have more sense not to gamble, because gambling is risky. Of course, you can afford to take risk, and that's another story. But nevertheless, if you have something tangible to invest money, like subtle energies, I think people will be ready to invest. So I don't think we have any problem of getting the investment into these new ventures. The problem only is to change the paradigm, to convince enough technologists or convince enough entrepreneurs by, as you said, small initial success.
Yeah, so now the idea of subtle money, I mean, what you're saying is that the kind of the way of the quantum economics is for people to invest in projects that kind of tap into the subtle experiences. Okay.
And try to improve people's subtle experiences.
Okay. Well, that, you know, I think, you know, that, you know, right now, people, I think there's a shift in consciousness right now that people are really, I think people are really looking for that opportunity. You know, it's,
I think so too.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, hopefully we can, start, I mean, because people, to me, it seems like people really, still have a, you know, I need to see it before I jump in kind of mentality, you know, show me first, you know, that it works before I decide to do that. And then I think that's kind of what they're, you know, those little steps that we can make in that direction will help convince people to start to shift that perspective.
Yeah. There's the same thing as what happened with solar energy and other sustainable energy. Show me. Because the point is that of course, we all know about solar energy, but to make it competitive with the energy of oil, which is practically free, that had to be shown first. And then the demonstration took about 25 years before they could produce anything that can compete with the cheap oil energy. So in this case, it is a different sort of challenge. The vital energies, one cannot even see in the usual sense. One has to measure it with complex apparatuses, and one has to have believable theories, which we do now have, thanks to quantum physics, and this is the change. We have a believable theory now, and we have the technology. We can measure vital energy now, quite accurately in some cases, and so now is the time. Without these changes, I don't think could talk about subtle economy, and my book would be just a futuristic book of largely based on imagination. But it just so happens that much of it is already being practiced. You know, in medicine, we are practicing it already. I have suggested in the book that if we change Medicare to make, you know, 75% of people are suffering from chronic diseases. In these diseases, really, the material medicine doesn't have any real effectiveness. They can temporarily give a little break, but ultimately produce only damage to the body, because all material drugs and pharmaceuticals produce their poisons, side effects, you know. So people know that too, but what can they do? They just don't know any better. Subtle energies give a same kind of relief, even better relief and more permanent relief, and without side effects. Only people, if people knew that, only if we have large-scale production of alternative medicine, vital energy medicine. So what we are lacking is that we already have the small-scale production of these things. We have small-scale machines that you can buy that make feel better. Some people even tried, you know, small-scale magnets, put magnets into the bed. That's the same kind of thing. It's a subtle energy technology. Magnets in the void, how does that work? Because we have an electromagnetic body. The electromagnetic body interacts with the magnets, and electromagnetic body is connected with the vital energies, and the vital energies make us feel better. That's how it works. But, of course, how to convince people that magnets have anything to do with feeling better? People can be convinced easily, but you have to educate them. For example, everybody can relate to if I claim that you'll feel happy in your bathroom. People spend so much time in the bathroom, not because they want to look at the mirror. I mean, yes, sure, they do, but that's not the only reason. The reason is, generally speaking, men and women feel happy in the bathroom. Why? Because there is a preponderance of negative ions. Physicists have found that long time ago, but we didn't know why. Now we know. Negative ions interact with the electromagnetic body that we have, and that has effect on the feelings, and this is why negative ions make us feel happy, because endorphins get emitted in the process in the brain.
Wow.
So, you know, in this, Yeah, this is the kind of thing that if people are educated this way, then they will start believing. And this is so easy to prove because you can feed yourself an endorphin blocker and then you are not feeling happy in the bathroom anymore. So it's not, you know, these are scientifically established things and easy to establish. So I think the training can be done, educating can be done, and when it is done, vital energy will be the most popular industry that has come in a long, long time, second maybe only to the steam engine and the automobile.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that the education and would go a long way. I know that I've learned something new from just the last few minutes. That's great. You know, we're down to about 9 minutes here, Dr. Goswami, and there's one other area that I would like to touch on, and that is, you know, if someone out there is a business person, an entrepreneur, someone who is, you know, kind of in charge of or managing a business, how would you know, the understanding of quantum economics, how could that fit into their way of building a business, you know, making it bigger and better?
Yes, this is the reason that you know, my colleague Dr. Jim Alvino and I have formed a company, a subsidiary of Quantum Activism, Center for Quantum Activism, which is called Quantum Economics Business Coaching. We are going to go door to door to businesses and teach them how to make their business compatible with the new economics that is coming. And the first step would be to vitalize their office space. And we'll do it by using a variety of ways, including giving the employees, instead of coffee breaks, giving the employees things like Tai Chi or meditation or yoga breaks. Initially, they may not feel so enthusiastic about it, but after they do it a few times and they see the benefits, they will absolutely be very happy to make the transition. I understand that small scale is already happening. Companies like Google, which are very forward-thinking, are giving such breaks. But this can be done in a much more concerted way. And also, of course, we can use also other vital energy techniques to improve the vital energy of the workplace, like vitalized water. We can give them vitalized air freshener and stuff like that. But for that, we need to, that's the second step. Second step is for the company to start investing in vital energy per se, because they will directly see the benefit of having a revitalized workspace, because the productivity will go up. So it will take just a few months to see that the productivity is going up. Then they would be interested themselves in producing vital energy in whatever their interests are, for example, food industry, diet food industry, perfume industry, cosmetic industry, housing industry, architects. They will all be interested in vital energy because they already have well understood plans of how to vitalize these places. Like we already told you how to vitalize a house. You know, you get a developed happy person and let the person live there for a few weeks, the place will be vitalized better than you ever can with just, you know, ordinary, just move into a new house. How hard it is to feel better, feel good in a new house. Everybody who's lived in a new house knows that. It takes a while before you get used to your own vital energy, before you feel good in a new house. So, you know, in this way, we will know, we'll make inroads, whichever industry it is. We always have something vitalized, meaning. If it's a meaning industry, we have new ways of cultivating creativity. Same thing with vital energy. And eventually, we'll convince the companies, big corporations, to hire these great sages or very developed personalities in their human resources department, because people can have a blue day and then they can just, instead of seeing a psychiatrist or seeing a psychologist or simply taking a leave, they they can just routinely, preventive medicine, they can just routinely visit these great sage-like person in the sitting in the human resources department having a job, and this human capital will benefit the company's bottom line in a regular way, in a very well-defined way, and undebatable way, right? This is the kind of thing that we'll propose to companies, and in much more details, we lay out the details and teach them how to be creative, how to do it, how to bring love in the corporate media, and so forth.
That's great. Well, now, and if there is a company out there that wants to, you know, use this service, how would they get in contact? How would they get in contact with you, or how do they go about retaining that service?
Well, for now, they can go into my website and already see the find out the new website that we are creating, and Dr. Jim Alvino is creating. So we already have the all the paraphernalia. For now, I don't have the name of the new website offhand. So for now, just my website is enough. If you go to
amitswami.org. Okay. Great. That's great. Well, guys, we're down to the last few minutes, Dr. Goswami. This has really been really, really fun, and I've really enjoyed our conversation. So are there maybe any words that you may want to give the listeners about the value of, you know, quantum economics in their life, or any other message that you may want to present that we didn't touch on?
Yes, absolutely. The greatest part of quantum economics, apart from the fantastic new news that it can eliminate the boom and bust and give us a stable economy, that, of course, is the greatest news. But apart from that, the next great news is this. You know, for a long time, we have known that the basic problem of saving capitalism today is that we know that our standard of living has gone high too much, and material resources is just not going to keep up with this for very long. So the question always comes in, you know, sometimes it's put in the form of three R's. Three R's are reuse, which some of us are doing already, recycle, which most of us are doing already, but then third one is reduce. How do you reduce consumption? Mm-hmm. It seems like sacrificing, and we live in a society which are not used to sacrificing. So reduce never happens, and therefore the problems will continue to get more and more severe. Quantum economics is going to enable you to reduce. Why? As Maslow said, and as psychologically you can prove it to yourself, when you satisfy your lower needs of survival and start delving into the higher needs, you'll find a strange thing happening to your psyche. You become more and more and more attracted to this satisfying the higher needs, and your need for satisfying lower needs just disappear. For example, everybody has a blue day. You have a blue day, you go and have a shopping spree. Temporarily, your mind is limited. No doubt about it. Everybody does it. But if you know the subtle energies and instead go to a Tai Chi master, that too will lift you. What's the difference? The difference is that with the clothes, you get habituated to the clothes just in a few days. They don't satisfy anymore. They don't give you the lift that they did before. Whereas here what happens is that you do this Tai Chi practice, even in private or in class. Either way you do it, the energy only gets better and better. As you do the movements better, you feel even better. So, and these things stay with you. This ability of consuming vital energy is transforming. It enables you to enjoy the subtle even better and more and more. And therefore, we can reduce the consumption of materials by delving into subtle economics. So subtle economics is not only going to establish a stable economy right now, but in the future, it's going to accomplish that one thing that we all covet, but we have never been able to figure out how: sustainability. We'll have a sustainable economics forever and ever on Earth without having to worry about anything.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, Dr. Goswami, thank you very much for your time today. I enjoyed our conversation, as I always do, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been theoretical physicist Dr. Amit Goswami, and we have been speaking about his new book called Quantum Economics, Unlocking the Power of an Economics of Consciousness. Again, you can find out more about his books by visiting his website, which is www.amitgoswami.org. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Check out his books. They're really thought-provoking and really shift your perspective. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.